Welcome to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. I am your host, Sherry Yuen Hunter. Here, we speak with amazing guests to make the world a better place by helping people heal from intergenerational trauma. Sandwich parents are in between the way we got parented and the way we now want to parent our children.
All right. So Jo Lynn is a trauma recovery coach and the founder of the FOTA Project, Family of the Accused. She and her husband, Jim, have built a support system to meet emotional needs of those who are supporting loved ones through the criminal justice systems, from accusation to trial to prison sentence and even life after prison. She really understands the challenges that families face. With Jolene on your team, you never have to be alone or lost when you're going through something so devastating and unthinkable. I'm really excited to have Jolene on our Sandwich Parenting Podcast today. I can't believe the work that you're doing. I'm so excited that you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Sherry. It's such an honor to be here. Yeah, it's a story that deserves to be shared.
So. I really think so. And so let's start there. You know, I'm interested in the origin story of the FOTA Project.
Yeah. Okay. So to say the FOTA Project started well before the FOTA Project started is probably a little bit accurate, right?
I hear you.
So I'll start way before that and just give a little backstory on my husband and I and my family a little bit. So my husband and I own a pretty successful marketing company. We help small businesses market themselves in kind of unique ways. And part of that company, we do a lot of coaching as well. So it's not just done for you services, but it's, hey, here's what you can do in your business, outside of your business, and so forth, right? So we had a group of our top coaching clients that we were doing a one-year mastermind with them, where we would meet monthly, we would talk about each of their individual businesses. And then once a quarter, we would meet just for the fun of it, you know, and do 2-day intensives in different cities around the country. And we had clients all over the US and Canada that were part of this group. And meanwhile, I have 3 adult sons kind of doing their thing, you know, one of them in the military, the other 2 living, you know, living their best lives, just learning lessons and whatever, right?
Yeah.
And since they were adults, my husband and I, we ran our business online. And so we were able to, and interested in living different places, different seasons, right? So we would spend a winter someplace tropical and summers usually in the mountains. And my kids all lived in, even the one in the military, all lived in Colorado. So we'd come to Colorado for the summers. And that was, it was just freaking awesome being able to just live like that, right? Travel around and still be there for my kids on the phone, virtual meetings and things like that, and spending summers with them. So one winter we happened to be in California that winter, and just working normally, I was preparing for a 2-day intensive that we were going to have in Las Vegas and just wrapping up like the kind of all the final things. I think it was 10 days before the intensive. So it was all travel arrangements and menus and all of those things. That was kind of occupying my time getting ready for this. And at the end of a work day, I noticed like 4 missed calls on my cell phone. And I went, oh my gosh, I didn't even hear my phone ring, right?
Yeah, and yeah, oh boy.
Yeah, and 4 missed calls and 4 voicemails. And I play the first voicemail and it is this automated voice. You have a collect call from an inmate at this county jail. And I went, oh my gosh. And then I hear my son's voice. Oh my gosh. And I'm going to tear up talking about this. I haven't talked about it in a while. Yeah. Everything changed that day, right? Yes, your role as a parent changes.
Yes.
You can't just call a county jail and say, hey, I hear my son is there. Can I chat with him?
You mean they don't have a customer service line that says hello?
They really don't put you, you know, transfer you to his cell, put you on hold. No, they don't do that. So it was the next day before I even talked to him. And then he tells me, oh my gosh, we have 15 minutes on the phone. And he says, and even then I didn't realize, I'm thinking it's 15 minutes a day. So I talked to him for 15 minutes and I'm like, okay, call me tomorrow. And then I wait till the next day. Like, what the heck? I didn't tell him, just call me right back. It was a little nuts. And I've got all of my top coaching clients, right? Marketing coaching clients still expecting us to be in Las Vegas in 10 days.
And fully present and the top-notch service that they've had all year long. like their expectations don't change when your life falls apart.
No, nor should they. Okay. Nor should they, because you need to be there for your clients. Right. And yeah, things happen and life happens, but how can I tell my clients, hey guys, my son was just arrested, and so I'm going to be a little bit distracted. Like, I'm not going to feel right. Not only that, but there is so much shame in our society.
I was going to say,
supporting a loved one who has committed a crime or even been accused of a crime. The percentage of people in our prisons that are there that shouldn't be is crazy. It's a crazy amount of people.
There are like three topics right there that could be like hours of discussion, right? Because the shame issue is huge. What, like, you know, there's shame. And then there's the whole just being accused triggers all that shame.
Holy smokes.
Just and even starting it. Oh.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what do I do? How do I do this? I don't even know. I don't know how to find an attorney. I don't know how bail works. Like, who teaches us how bail works?
Nobody,
you know what
teaches,
I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, you see that in like legal shows, but they have cases that get solved in like 45 minutes. Bail is one of those things you don't really understand. Yeah.
Do I call like Dog the Bounty Hunter, and what is his role in
this? Right, right. Right.
So one thing I learned that I think is important to really say here is everything you learn on TV about the entire experience, legal system, trials, jail, prison, all of it is wrong. You don't learn from that.
No.
You really don't. And I think that, you know, I mentioned just really briefly before we were recording that about using crime as entertainment, right? That's what we do in our society. Crime is just very, very entertaining, the way we tell stories.
Thank you for saying that. That's, yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about this before because I love crime podcasts when I travel and all of those, you know, the true crime stories. What I have learned through this experience is what those actually do is really contribute very heavily to the kind of othering of not just the accused person, but their families as
everybody.
Well. Like, what happens to a family when a loved one is accused, convicted, spends time in prison is horrific most of the time. It is the shame that's involved in that, the isolation that happens.
Oh, isolation.
It is crazy.
Of course. Because,
yeah. So for me, I was raised in a very religious household, and so was my husband, right? Different religions, but very, very, this is how you behave. You stay away from all of the things, right? All of the things.
Lots of rules. So, there's rules. There's rules and spoken and unspoken rules.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so when this happened, and as I was learning how serious the charges were that my son was being charged with, he was looking at life in prison. And I could not tell most of my family anything about it. I think it took probably at least 3 years before I ever mentioned my son had been in prison for 3 years before I told most of my family. Like, what the heck? Talk about isolation, right?
So in other words, before you even told them, you had already experienced judgment by the people that you love the most before you even told them. So you're already experiencing, I cannot tell the people that are closest to me, like that you're already suffering.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And thankfully, for me, and this doesn't happen in every case, but thankfully for me, my husband was amazing, like through the whole thing. I remember the day of the phone calls, I told him like, oh my gosh, like our world's just changed. I don't know what to do here. I don't even know what to do. And he said, I was in such total shock. He stepped in, he called the jail. He found out how we, you know, put money on our phones. Like, he's like, they've got this thing. I set it all up. Oh. Now he can call us and it's fine. It's not exactly like press 8 to whatever. Anyway, you have to have money on your account. So,
right. Right. And, and who would know that? Like, I don't think anybody would even remotely realize, okay, so this is how the phone calls work. And this is something you can set up. Like, why would anybody know this?
When your time runs out, they can call you back you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
Yeah. He did that. He said, listen, we've got to interview some attorneys.
Yep.
Let's fly to Colorado. He made the flight arrangements. Like, he stepped in and just is like, you know, you relax here or ruminate, whatever you need to do.
Whatever your whatever your nervous system is doing, go ahead. Yeah.
You go ahead with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to take over. He took care of everything and he started, you know, I was looking actually for attorneys at the time and going through attorney websites and making phone calls and making those arrangements. We worked together on this and I love that. And I know that many families, many people don't have a partner in this whole thing. So that was amazing. We wound up moving to Colorado for the year that the, you know, all the legal process was happening. And so that, you know, and I had the unique ability to do that too. So that was really nice for me to be able to be there and support him and to have a husband who says, yeah, you need to, you know, you need to be there. I was looking at, this is my last year with my son. Like he's looking at a life sentence. I will never have a birthday celebration with him in this way, right? Like all of these things and the grief around that. Holy moly.
Grief is huge.
Yeah. Grief and loss in this situation. A lot of people look at grief and loss as, you know, when someone you love dies, right? There's grief and there's loss there. In the prison world, someone you love didn't die, but you've lost them. Like you've lost the future relationship you had planned. You've lost your idea of who they are. Like that whole thing needs to be recalculated, right? Because they did this thing while I thought this other thing of them, right? How is this person who I love deeply? Like I taught him to tie his shoes and all of those things. And now he's committed this crime. Like how do I reconcile that? Right. So all of this processing, holy moly.
And it's a lot of re-traumatization every time something else happens. Cause like you said, I mean, not to minimize, but when someone dies, you get re-traumatized potentially at certain dates or right. Mother's Day or Christmas. Yeah. Like, so not to minimize that, but in someone who is living but not living their lives, the re-traumatization would be double or triple that because it's not just their birthdays and it's not just Christmas, but it's anything that pertains to he's there and he is physically alive just there beyond. And just beyond this wall.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, he's suffering the whole time.
Right, as a mother,
and I just thought he will die in there. He's gonna get in a fight. He will, all the stories that we see on TV shows, you know, crime for entertainment shows. As a mother, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what is he gonna go through in there? So there's all of that too. Like he's not just gone, he's out of reach. I can't protect him. So I remember thinking my biggest fear as a mother with having a son in the military was, of course, deployment to some awful frontline war situation, right? And we hear of all, oh my gosh, of all of the things. And immediately I thought, oh my gosh, I'd rather he be deployed. He would have his whole unit behind him.
Right. He'd have his team.
He'd have his team. Have a team in prison. You don't. You just don't have a team there.
No.
So all of those things went through my mind as well. Like there is, the catastrophizing was so immense.
Yeah.
First of all, I was what I assumed was a very strong, healthy person coming into this.
Right.
I hadn't been in therapy. I hadn't needed, you know, any real guidance in my mind. I'm like, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm kind of crushing it. So everything's good. I don't need, aside from like a business coach, I hadn't had any kind of anything. And through this process, I mean, we were a couple months in, my husband said, Jolyn, you really need some help here. Like, and luckily again, I have this supportive husband who sees me just on my knees for months at a time. And he said, you can't, you know, by the way, we did go to Vegas. We did have the,
that must have been a blur, boy.
Oh, holy smokes. And thank goodness, again, it wasn't just me. My husband did all of it. I made the arrangements and worked with the hotel and all of that. But I saw the clients a little bit. I did dinners and things with them, but I like had to shore myself up for these appearances. And my husband did all of the coaching. And it was amazing. It was wonderful for him to do that. Yeah. We had to, though, through this whole process, we had to end that program because I'm like, I can't show up for them for two day intensives, right?
So the cost, a lot of the loss of your life involves not being able to show up in a way that potentially you could have normally. That impacts you as a identity too, right?
Exactly, right? Yeah. I went from I'm crushing it to I'm a sobbing heap on the floor every day.
Oh, and
I can't show up for my clients in the way that, right?
Yeah, they're not gonna like that.
no, right? And so, well, and then the financial loss, right? This just from a business standpoint was
absolutely
that the other parts of our business were great and they were strong and kind of a well-oiled machine. So that worked well, but this required me to show up and be there. Yeah. And I mean, when I say intensive, they're pretty freaking intensives, right? So yeah, we did one more after that. And we were talking to our business coach and he's like, how about just not do it? Just not continue it. It was our most profitable product. Yeah. I'm like, well, how do we not continue it? But we didn't. This trauma had totally, I mean, our income was impacted. And luckily, I didn't have a job I had to show up to every day. And, or an office, I mean, I had a job I had to show up to every day. But, you know, I work from home, from my computer, whatever. I didn't have to face coworkers and a boss and say, you know, today I'm really struggling. I didn't have that. And I can see now how people, you know, their employment is affected if they have a kind of a more typical job than I do.
You know what, you know, one of the things that struck me as you're talking to is that even as you're going through something so difficult and kind of out of the blue for you, you know, you seem to have this ability to see what you have, like appreciating your husband, appreciating your privilege, because you've identified a number of things where you said, you know, I was lucky in this, you know, and I was lucky in this. And I think that's a wonderful way to live life, because we all do have certain parts of our lives, you know, where we have a leg up in different ways. So I just loved how you're able to like kind of say, yeah, I know I had this, right? It doesn't take away from how hard it was.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that I think, honestly, a gift that I have, the ability to see the silver lining. And that really did keep me going. It's funny how like, and it's that is super strong in me.
I can tell. Yeah.
It is a true gift that it I really know is. That I have that a lot of people don't have. Even in me, that got clouded.
Of course. I was sort of trying to say like, you know, how amazing that you had that gift, even as you're going through this. But as you're going through this, of course, it's going to cloud your gifts. Of course. That's a good point.
The reality that trauma can, in its own insidious way, right, come in and take away the gifts that you have and the strengths that you have. Holy moly. Holy moly is right. So when my husband said, Jolynn, you really do need some help. Like I see it. We need for you to have some help. Your kids need for you to have some help. Everyone around you, like forget what this was doing with my relationship with my other sons too. And I'm so traumatized, right? So it took a minute for him to convince me. And I don't even know what, I mean, everything was offline for me, right? Like all of my critical thinking was totally offline.
Executive functions.
So finally I hear what my husband is saying. After months of suffering, I looked for any kind of help in this area. And at the time I really struggled to find people who support specifically families going through this. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, and then I thought, well, that's because I'm the only person suffering through this, right? Like nobody else.
Don't we do that? Don't we think that we go through that, don't we?
Yes. I'm the only one. Everyone else has got this, or nobody else's son has done something like this, or, you know, all of it.
Right.
And so I found a therapist who didn't specialize in anything about this, but oh my gosh, she's been wonderful. I just celebrated my fifth year with her. So, and thankfully, she helped me in the reframing. She helped me really to see, and I was beginning my relationship with her at a time when my son was going into the prison system. And I was seeing the things that were real and the things that were not real about what I had learned about the prison system. So that was helpful. And she helped me through all of that. But the having somebody to walk through that, who, you know, she hadn't gone through it before, but it was still incredibly helpful.
What I was going to say was, I think what happened with you is that you needed you. So like, you know, if you were to go back in time, what you needed was you. But in the absence of that, you found someone who was gifted, who was there for you, who met you where you were. So she may not have specialized in this, but she specialized in lending her executive functions to you, right? Yeah. And she lending the reframe, helping you refine your gift. So what a beautiful relationship. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. It was really, really amazing. What happened to me was sudden, like, oh my gosh, like an injury. Like I, you know, broke my leg or whatever. Yeah. Like it was sudden. And trauma trauma doesn't always happen that way. We know that, right? Like trauma can happen in smaller instances over time. Yep. And I'll just throw in at this point that a lot of prison families experience that as well. Like it is re-traumatization.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless of how that happens though, the road out of it is not a quick road, right? It's not a quick fix. It's just like a broken leg. It is. Oh my gosh, I've got to reframe this thing and I've got to look at this and the work took a minute. But to have kind of a fellow traveler along that road was imperative. It was so important. And even having a supportive husband, right? I did tell one of my sisters, she was super, super supportive too. And then a second sister, I come from a quite a large family, but they were able to support in their own unique ways. And it was wonderful. But having somebody who was educated in helping me find myself was really, really important. That's where the healing happened. Right.
I like that. She specializes in helping you find yourself.
Yeah. It was, that whole thing was amazing.
I like that.
Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. And then through that healing, what I thought was also really cool was I was able to support my son better. Right. I was able to show up for him. I was able to say, oh my gosh, here's what I just covered with my therapist. What do you think about this in your life? Like, let's talk about that. And just kind of that secondary support now that I can pass through me to him was amazing. And our relationship was able to grow in ways that truly, had this not happened, I wouldn't have the relationship with him that I have now, which is beautiful and amazing. And I love it. Right. So yeah.
Sometimes you just have to pause for a bit and recognize those wins, you know, and just be able to say, as horrific as that was, something came, was okay that came after.
Yeah. I know, it was pretty crazy. So me looking at how alone it was in the beginning through the healing process. And then beyond that, I'm like, I can't believe now I can. But I can't believe now that people going through this specific thing, especially, feel alone in this.
Yeah.
Because as soon as I started talking about it, right? Because I couldn't talk about it at first. I'm like, I'm not telling anyone. No. Nobody's going to know this about me.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh.
I start talking about it a little bit. And in the beginning, every person that I talked to said, oh my gosh, I know someone in prison. My so-and-so went through this. So many people, Sherry, it's amazing in our country. There are more people incarcerated just in North Carolina than there are in most countries.
It's a little bit mind-boggling, you know, to think, well, I mean, it's a business, but it's just unfathomable at how the policing system, the justice system, all of these things work together, not to help people, but to actually make it worse in so many ways. I just wanted to sort of pause for a second to tell you that all the things that you're talking about, the passion that you're, you know, telling your story with, really shows up on your website. I had a chance to just sort of like look at the website and thought, wow. Like if somebody went through this and just read this website, they would immediately feel not alone. Like immediately, they would just know that you understood them. You know, they would know that you're there for them. You have a free email service to, you know, offer them if they don't have financial means, like give them support. Like you're giving that for free. So I really enjoyed, I mean, enjoyed is such a weird word, but I really felt it. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you for that, Sherry. Yeah. I think that was one of the most important things that I discovered was that I'm not alone in this. Mm-hmm. that me not talking about this is the shame portion of it. And it's not me, a fault on my part, right?
Exactly.
This comes up a lot when I talk with prison families, like, who do I tell? How do I tell people this thing that is the biggest weight on me right now? And one thing, I love the comparison. So I'll just give a little peek into what I talk to my clients about that, if that's okay.
Please.
Because this just came up last week where this person was saying, oh my gosh, how do I, like, do I tell my friends? How do I determine who gets to, you know, who knows and who doesn't and who I tell? And
that's a great question.
Am I lying to people that I'm not telling? Like, what do I do?
That's an interesting question. Am I lying? Okay.
Because it feels like a lie. Like when somebody says, hey, where's your son? How come he's blah, blah, blah? I haven't seen him in a while. Yeah. Like, is it a lie? And so I use this comparison and it makes people a little bit uncomfortable. I do it on purpose. So here we go. And I talk about kind of inner circle friends versus arm's length friends. If an arm's length person comes to me, hey, Jillian, how you feeling? What's going on? You know, I haven't seen you in a while. I'll be like, oh, you know, I'm hanging in, doing okay. It's whatever. It's winter in Colorado, right? That's where I'm at right now. And I would say something simple and then ask them how they're doing. Like, that's a typical conversation with an arm's length friend, right? A hello, greeting, how you doing? And I'm doing okay. But if an inner circle friend comes to me same day, asks the same question, hey, Jillian, how you feeling? I haven't seen you for a bit. I'd say, well, you know, I'm finally getting my hormones regulated. I'm like, the hot flashes are under control. Like, right?
Okay.
And the weight gain and the whatever, right?
I'm going to
have a very different conversation with that person.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't mean that I'm lying to the arm's length friend.
I love
it. I'm being a good friend to them by not overburdening them with a lot of my personal stuff, right?
I love it. They're not ready to hear all that.
And they haven't really earned the right to hear
all that. Oh, I like that too. Right? I like that too. Yeah, yeah.
So for me, that doesn't feel like a lie when I tell somebody how I'm feeling. You know, when I just say, yeah, I'm doing okay, hanging in, whatever. But if an arms like friend comes to me and says, hey, I haven't seen your son in a while. How's he doing? Suddenly I feel like if I don't tell them everything, I'm lying to them, like, or I'm hiding something. So that's just the shame talking. It's not just be conversational with them. So even educating about that, that's one tiny little piece.
But that's so huge because the impact to the possibility of ripping open that wound and scab again, it's every day. So like, this is a tiny thing, but every day you're interacting with arm's length people. And there's going to be a percentage of them saying, hey, how are your kids? How are the boys doing?
Of course they are. Of course, because that's just what we do in our society. We check in and are interested in each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's one thing that we really work on is how do we interact? How we have to learn to interact with this new world that we're in, or this world that we're in as a new person in it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. With new circumstances. So this is some of the work that you actually do with your clients. Like, this is part of the content, part of the support system that you build for them.
Yeah. So I had been in, just to back up a little bit, I had been in coaching for a while, business coaching, marketing coaching, whatever. You know, I see the value in having a guide, right? Having somebody a fresh perspective, somebody to kind of see around corners for you that's been there before or whatever. During this process, and I thought, as I'm coming through healing, I'm like, oh my gosh, I had such a hard time finding somebody who would really get it.
Yeah.
And I have kind of this basic skill set. I really, really want to provide this. I need to provide this for those people who are going through this, because truly it's like half of our population. We don't know that because we don't talk about it because of all of that crazy shame, right? That this toxic level of shame that we all experience. So I need to work to reduce that shame, to be there for people, to let them know they are not the only ones, that they're not some dirty underclass for having, you know, making the choice to support a loved one through this horrible, horrible time in their lives, right? This does not make us awful.
No, but you know what I loved about it? When you described the fact that as soon as you found the right support, as soon as you found the right therapist, it changed how you were showing up for your son. Like that part of it was really interesting to me because you shored up and you rebuilt yourself. And then now your relationship with your son and the whole process was different. That changed how you faced everything.
Yeah, for sure. So you know, I go back to the safety warnings on, you know, when you fly and they tell you, you know, an oxygen mask comes out, put your own oxygen mask on first before you take care of the person that you're supporting.
That's it.
It's a big deal. There's real reason for that.
Yeah. And so you're providing oxygen for a lot of families. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's your oxygen mask. You put it on you first.
Yeah. Wow.
And as parents, that's way more difficult than you might think. Like sometimes my first session with clients is all about, well, wait, how do I provide this for him? What do I do for him?
And I'm you're like, hang on. I love
it. Here's how you do that. You take care of you.
Yeah. Because we can't give from an empty container. Mm-mm. We just can't.
No. And the other thing is, if we are living our lives, like at the time my son was arrested, I freaking loved my life. Like working with my best friend in the world every day, traveling around, having a good old time. Right. But my stress level was pretty high. I'm at capacity a little bit, which is okay if nothing happens.
I totally understand. I totally, it's like this balance, like you're sort of precariously balanced all the time. It's beautiful. You're doing a wonderful balance walk. It's wonderful, but it's very hard work. If something tips you a little bit over.
Yeah. And for me, it was a big thing, but honestly, I look back at that and I think, oh my gosh, it wouldn't have taken a big thing. Maybe, you know, some little, I get sick or something. I don't know. Anything could have kind of, because I was like right at, I was at capacity, and I think about the fact that, you know, I come into this, I'm emotionally strong. I've never needed any kind of coaching or whatever.
Yeah.
I got this, I'm crushing it, but am I? Because I have no reserve, right?
You had no reserve. Oh my gosh.
Reserve. And with no reserve, this phone call, this voicemail that I get from this jail pushed me over. I had no reserve. And so, my belief has around, you know, quote unquote, healthy people seeking coaching and therapy and really doing a lot of self-care for themselves has totally, totally changed.
I hear you.
I feel like I didn't ever practice meditation. I didn't practice any of that. The self-care things that I advocate for now, I think here's this, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda stuff, right?
But I know
the experience have been, how would it have been had I had some reserve?
And it takes things to show you that.
Yeah. What a beautiful lesson. That won't happen again.
As a coach, you know, it's funny when you talk about this, it occurs to me that this is a recurring theme with all the amazing, like I interview lots of different people and, pretty much at the end of the day, when someone says, this happened to me, I wasn't ready for it, I needed help, I didn't know how to do it, and then I figured it out. And now I'm here to help people who were as lost as I was then so that they can have some reserves. I want to help them, you know, have their reserves and not go through the lessons that I had to learn the hard way. So it's like, kudos to you.
Thank you, Sherry. Yeah, it's the drive is real when you've been there, you know. The drive is real, my friend.
I love that. The drive is real.
Yes, it is. It is incredibly important. And I see that, you know, we really look at what we've been going through the last few years. Oh, the separation from each other, the loneliness, isolation. I think, this feels familiar. You know, it's a little familiar. I don't have the connections. I don't have the people in my life that I used to have.
Yeah.
And the belief systems and the divisions that those belief systems have caused and just the anguish around that.
Huge globally. Impacted everyone. It's almost as if everybody else now are like, oh, this is what it feels like to go through trauma that other people were going through before that nobody knew. Right? It's like everybody has a taste of it now.
Right. And I'm seeing some of the same trauma responses, all of it that I have been working with in the prison world. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, how about we connect a little bit?
Yeah, right? I love that.
Let's get together a little bit. Yeah. So it's kind of amazing. Like for me, as I came through this healing, I did, you know, started studying, first of all, our prison system and the effects of that and the astronomical numbers. And then the process of, you know, the trauma experience and coming through that and the importance of having a guide through that and all of it, all of those things, I'm seeing, you know, the same kind of whispers there that I saw in the prison world, in our world. And I'm like, man, okay. So at first people were coming to me from the prison world saying, Jolynn, I need your help getting through this. Like, what in the heck is happening to me? What's going on? Yeah. And yeah. Now I'm seeing people outside of the prison world saying, yeah. Hey, Jolynn, what the heck is happening to me? Like, what is this, yeah. you know? And yeah. so I love that trauma skills translate and that we can be there for each other. Once we can kind of see and identify, we can be there for each other through so many things, right? It's just,
I'm at a loss for words because I feel like I just completely, I'm sitting with what you're saying. And it's mm-hmm. like, once you've seen and understood trauma, you almost can't unsee it. You know, yeah. like you see it in movies, you see it in books, you see it in people going through the prison system, you see it when people are going through a global pandemic. Like, you can't unsee mm-hmm. that these are trauma responses. You can't unsee what it's doing to their nervous system, right? Like, it's, they know that you understand it and they know that you can help them now. So that's mm-hmm. I love this work.
Me too. It's really amazing. You know what I really love to see? When someone is suffering so much from any aspect of trauma and you can help them reframe what they're going through, and then they're like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
And then they feel hope because ultimately they go, now I understand this.
Yeah.
Ah, now I know what I can do, right? Otherwise you're stuck because you're yes. like, I don't know what's going on. Like, what is this? Why do I feel this way? I like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I can't fix it. I'm helpless. Yeah.
The weight is so heavy. It's so heavy. And in every aspect, it's like all of these weights on you. And when I can go to someone and just say, listen, let's look at this weight here. Let's look at this weight here. And maybe I'll offer you a different perspective on this weight. And boom, it's gone. Whoa. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. This is now like, I'm lighter now. Yeah. I'm addicted to that. I'll tell you that, Sherry.
Me too. I 100% hear you. Yeah. So that's how you started your organization and now you do this work. And so as we're sort of getting closer to, you know, the last mm-hmm. couple of questions, my biggest question really is, what is your one piece of advice then? You know, when someone comes to you and says, like, I don't even know where to start. You know, every time I pick up something, it's like a big ball of tangled yarn. You know, I'm like, it's a mess. I'm, you know, I'm triggered here, triggered there. Like, I can't handle it. I'm overwhelmed. So when somebody comes to you with that, what's the biggest one piece of advice that you would give people?
Yeah, I think the thing that helps the most people that I can see is finding a fellow traveler, finding someone who understands what you're going through and also understands how you can move through it and get out of it and connect with them, work through that with them. When you're traumatized, when things are happening that you don't understand, that, and when you're triggered all the time, it's like you can't see the forest for the trees. It does not matter how emotionally healthy you are. It does not matter, right?
Finding
someone who can help you through that, whether they've been through the exact same thing or not, find someone who can help you through that. Lean on those around you, connect.
And how do you do that? Because the shame's in the way. So I hear you. I agree with that advice 100%. Mm-hmm. But now if someone says, okay, sure, but I can't get myself to do that, how do you help them through the shame piece?
I struggled until my husband told me, you need this, right? I think in that space, listening to those around you, relying on other people's executive function who are around you. And I know not everyone has that, right? I know not everyone has that, but when you see, and maybe we need to come to this point where everything is being affected, right? When you can see my relationships are being affected. My employment or business is being affected. Everything, like, you know, I'm not leaving my house. When you can
shower.
I haven't showered this week. Like, when we can, when those things start to become apparent, I think it's important to say, okay, here's where I'm at.
I love it. I love it. Acknowledge it. Acknowledge it.
Okay. I haven't showered this week. Okay. Maybe there's someone out there that can help me. You know what I mean? Like, do I want to stay here?
I love that.
Is this the life I want to have? And it's not easy, right? It's not when you're in that space. It's not something that just comes to you and okay, well, fine. I'll just get up and shower and I'll be fine. Well, actually, I think one thing that we can point back to when we start to see these things show up in our lives, lack of self-care, not being able to get to work, you know, calling in, our boss is angry at us, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. When we can start to see those things, realizing that this is not me being a bad person, this is me needing some help. And, you know, through that process, and that's not going to happen overnight either.
It's not.
But through that process, when these thoughts start to come to you, like, maybe, okay, all right, maybe my boss does have a reason to be upset with me. You know, all right, fine. You know, it's that act of reaching out can be a momentous one. It can be an incredibly difficult one.
It is. It is. Yeah.
Incredibly difficult. And, you know, like you mentioned earlier, finances may be an issue. I don't know if I can afford therapy. I don't have insurance that covers coaching. What do I do? Right.
That's right.
So one thing I did was, because that's a big issue in the prison world.
Of course.
So I partnered with a nonprofit that does support groups that are completely free specifically for prison families. And it's been amazing. So anyone who's listening to your podcast that is interested in that, of course, can reach out to me and I can give them that information.
I think what we'll do is make sure we have all the links that you want people to have as resources so that they can contact you so that they can learn more about this kind of support. Julia, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate this time. I relate. I mean, I don't actually have somebody in the prison system, but I feel so much just listening to you talk about this and relating it to trauma in general too, right? Because that is what people are going through. So thank you for what you do, for making the world a better place, for taking your pain and just making it better for other people. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Sherry. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. I hope, like me, you've learned something new that will help you along with your parenting journey. If you wish, you can always connect with me at www.sandwichparenting.com.